Good morning. It is 9:01. Now it's 9:02. And you're listening to WPRK Winter Park, Florida.
Nice. My name is Mirsadeh.
I'm Greg Golden.
And this is the Sandspur Hour.
Yeah, the next hour we'll be talking about news and local stuff from Rollins' perspective, as we are the student newspaper voice.
Voice of Raleigh Collie.
Yeah, but that's like WPRK slogan.
Oh,
so
we're,
let them have it. But we're on WPRK.
Can we be the soapbox of... No.
The soapbox.
We can be the megaphone, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, before we get started, we have traffic. Teletraffic is reporting in Orange County there is lane blockage at Conway and Goldenrod Road at Pershing Avenue. The alternative is Cimarron Boulevard. And other than that, I-4 eastbound Cayley Avenue to Colonial, there is some congestion. And in Seminole County, schools are back in session. Commuters are urged to drive with caution. Back to school, huh?
Yeah, actually, my brother, he went back to school today, senior year of high school, so quite fun.
And one of my roommates just started his teaching job in Seminole.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, good luck out there with those kids.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. All right, so you know what we got on today's program?
Yeah, we got a few things going on.
Yeah. We're going to start in a few minutes with our interview with Dr. Gail Sinclair of the Winter Park Institute.
Sweet.
We've talked a little bit about what the Institute does, bringing in those scholars and such.
Helping to illuminate the minds of the Rollins community.
Yeah. And hearts.
And hearts. Hearts and minds.
Souls.
And everything in between.
Okay. No exceptions. And then, what sort of Rollins-related story do you have for later?
I have something that's kind of been blowing up the Facebook recently. Two pages, actually. Rollins Confessional, Rollins Confessions, and Rollins Compliments. It's been hitting on the news, we'll definitely be talking about that a little bit later and kind of the implications of both those things.
Sounds Rollins-related. Okay, so let's get started with that interview I mentioned.
Heck yes.
All right. Take it away, me. I don't think that's started. Okay. We have auxiliary 2. Check.
Check.
One is pressed. Wasn't on.
Okay. Do you think it's going to work this time?
Absolutely.
Heck yes.
All right. Let's give that one more go. Here's me out in the field. Take it away, me.
The Winter Park Institute is entering its sixth season of bringing scholars and luminaries to Rollins campus. Dr. Gail Sinclair is the executive director of WPI. And how are the scholars chosen?
The scholars are chosen generally by faculty, staff, students. In the fall of each year, we set out a nomination request and ask them to send us names and suggestions why those scholars might be of interest. Then we have a committee made up of faculty who vote on those scholars and make decisions about ranking which one we think is most important, the one that we want to most bring to campus, down to the very least. And then I set out to engage the scholars, starting with the most desirable, and go as far as I can go in terms of spaces, financing, etc.
And how difficult are they to pursue?
It depends. Some are more difficult than others, obviously. But generally speaking, the scholars that have been nominated are already engaged with agents to give lectures in campuses and other organizations. So most of them are already out there, are looking for people to hire them to come speak to them. So it's just a matter of, do we have the amount of money they're requesting? Do they have the time that works with our time frame and so forth?
Mm-hmm. And is the original vision of WPI being fulfilled?
We sort of have a threefold mission, which is that we bring scholars to engage with our students, faculty, staff on campus, that our mission is also to engage in the community. We are called the Winter Park Institute. And I know that there's been some issue about why isn't it called the Rollins Institute, but really it was the president's idea that this is a gift that Rollins gives to the community, that we want to share these scholars with our community. And then we are also interested, when we can, in having these scholars engage with each other, bringing more than one at a time when possible, and listening in on their conversations. So it's really designed to raise the visibility, raise the intellectual discourse, and to be a gift that we give to the community. And the community seems to be very excited about that. They comprise a large number of our audience at most events. So I think that it's really been a tool that they have embraced, and we get calls all the time looking for who's coming next, what is our lineup for the next year. So we have about almost 1,300 friends of the Institute, people who've signed up, who want to get advanced information, want to know what we're doing, who's coming, how they get tickets, all of that. There's a lot of excitement in the community about the lineup that we've had. And I think we've come to generate an expectation that we will bring interesting people. And I found that even if people in the community don't know the scholar's name, they've come to accept that we bring quality people, so they trust us to come listen to those speakers, even if they're not names that they recognize.
And so for those people who are interested in attending events, it's not exclusively for Rollins students or faculty or staff, and generally anyone from the community can attend.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the scholars are nominated by our faculty, staff, and students, and so our focus is to bring in scholars that have engagement with what's happening on campus. But all of our main events, the public lectures, the evening lectures, are, as I just said, public. So they are free and open to the public. We do, with each scholar, have a student event, whether it be the scholars going into individual classrooms or whether we have a common hour discussion, so that every scholar coming in will have an ordained student event. And for the most part, those student events are organized by a faculty, and oftentimes we have a student panel who has questions to ask that scholar. And then we have some sort of social event, whether it's a reception or a dinner for specific people related to that scholar. But the main event is open to the public. Certainly we are encouraging faculty and students, and that is absolutely a top focus. But we're sharing these scholars with the community as well, and there's great excitement in the community about especially some of the high visibility scholars.
Mm-hmm. And how does the season begin in, is it September that the first event is?
Yes.
And then who are our first scholars?
Our very first scholar this year is creating real buzz. It's Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who I think a lot of our students know. I understand he's on Stephen Colbert, he's on the Jon Stewart The Daily Show, and he's very popular. He uses social media well. So I'm excited about the fact that our students actually know who he is and are excited about him. We're getting phone calls from all over, people who are flying in from various places, driving in from hours away. I just answered a phone call a few minutes ago, someone who was driving from an hour or two away and wanted to be sure to know where to come and what the details were. So we're really expecting a great crowd, and we're happy about the fact that he's coming in on the day that we're dedicating our new science building. So he'll be speaking at the dedication, and so I think that's a real plus, and that was something that we looked at in scheduling him. We intentionally brought him in on the day that we're dedicating the new science building, and he's aware of that and happy to participate in that as well. So he's creating a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement. So he will be our kickoff, which I think is a great way to kick off the season.
Mm-hmm. And I believe there are 9 scholars that have been announced thus far.
Yes.
And is that a final roster, or there announcements to come during the semester?
It's a final roster. Let's say somebody of just great magnitude falls into our laps, we'd be happy to add them, but it is a final roster. We are trying to essentially have one scholar per month. A couple times we have someone more than that, but generally speaking, one a month. And so after Neil deGrasse Tyson, we have Arun Gandhi. We're very excited about that. He is the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. And again, intentionally, we scheduled him on a specific day, October 2nd, which is United Nations International Nonviolence Day. It is Mahatma Gandhi's birthday as well. So we think it's very appropriate to have him on that day. And we're looking forward to that. I think he'll be a great speaker in terms of Rollins' mission of social responsibility and global responsibility. I think I'm messing up that phrase, but the idea that he is of a global nature and relates to the college mission, I think, excites us a lot. Mm-hmm. We follow him up with another international and well-known scholar, Elie Wiesel, who is the Nobel Peace Prize laureate. And we're excited about his visit. We've been looking at bringing him in for more than a year now. But we're also excited about the fact that we are pairing with a number of organizations in the community. November is the 75th anniversary commemoration of an event called Kristallnacht. Maybe a lot of people know about it. There are a lot of people who probably don't know about it. It was an event that really, I think, started the open hostilities, the open view of the hostilities between the Nazis and the Jewish population. It's a very somber commemorative event, and we have paired with the Holocaust Center, with Bach Festival, our own Cornell Fine Arts Museum, the Negro Spiritual Scholarship Foundation, interfaith foundations of various sorts, a number of entities in the community, all of us working together and have been working together for several months to put together a collection of events that surround Kristallnacht. And so Elie Wiesel is, I think, you know, a real jewel in that collection, but the collection itself is really a nice tribute, a nice commemoration, and a great collaboration in the community. So we're all proud to be partners in that. Four entities, that are Rollins. The Cornell Fine Arts Museum, Bach Festival, which is tangentially related to Rollins, the Music Department, and Winter Park Institute. So we're very excited about that collaboration.
And what's one more scholar that you'd like to expound upon a little bit for the listeners?
Oh, I have to pick only one?
Maybe a couple.
Well, of course we have our Billy Collins, who has been our Senior Distinguished Fellow since the very beginning. He will be with us again this year, reading from his latest collection. And I'll quickly go through these because I can't leave anybody out. Following Billy Collins, we have Sharon Robinson, whose name is probably not known, but her father's name is. She is the daughter of Jackie Robinson, the first African-American to break into the Major League Baseball. So she'll be talking about her father's legacy and what she's doing to continue that. We follow her with Terry Teachout, who's been here a number of times, who will be talking about his new biography on Duke Ellington. And he'll be with us for several weeks doing a number of things, so we're excited to bring him back again. Somebody that I think will also generate a lot of interest is Jeb Bush, former Florida governor. There's a lot of talk about whether he'll run for president or not. I don't know whether he'll talk about that at all, but he wants to talk about where America is now and his hope for the future. We have Ken Burns coming, the famous documentarian, who will be talking about national parks, and he wants to focus on the Florida Everglades. So he'll be dealing with something close to our own proximity. And then we'll end with, again, a name that may not be known, but I think she will be of great interest, Lori David, who was the producer of Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth, And she's also talking about food. Where we should eat, what we should eat, why food's important as part of the family. And we've already got an interest in Edible Orlando and various food entities to talk to, meet with her and collaborate with her. So I think we have a really thrilling season. I think there's something for everyone. It's very eclectic, which I think is a good thing, so that we can pull in people from all kinds of interests.
And where would someone find more information about the events upcoming?
We have a website. Our website is linked on Rollins' homepage, or we are rollins.edu/WPI.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
And thanks again to Dr. Gail Sinclair. And one of the stories she told me after we spoke was that in, was it 2 years ago that Jane Goodall was on campus?
Yeah, right. I want to say either, it was about 1 or 2 years ago.
And so she said that the furthest reaches of person that arrived was from Idaho.
Wow.
To come and see
to
her
come
speak.
And see her, that's crazy.
So they're reaching out there.
Well, for sure. No, I mean, some of these scholars, it's, I would definitely do a cross-country trek for a free talk from one of these famous speakers. It's amazing.
True. And they're also brought in for student-based interaction. You've had at least one such interaction. Am I right?
Yes.
Tell us.
Well, I mean, like, my interaction with the WPI... I think I know what you're talking about with my friend. Well,
your friend.
I tried to get and actually was almost successful.
Okay, yeah, talk about that.
I was very close to getting Phil Collins to come through the WPI, and it was really interesting because I was nominated in the fall. Phil Collins, and I wrote this really long, kind of somewhat humorous, but also, you know, serious letter that said, look, like, I think it'd be really cool if we got Phil Collins to come. Because he is, a scholar. You know, we have precedent. We got Paul Simon to come, and, you know, has done a lot. And this was actually before he started doing his Alamo stuff. And, you know, he if you don't know, by the by, Phil Collins has a big thing for, like, the Alamo and, like, Davy Crockett and that, and he actually wrote a book and everything about his big memorabilia collection. But by the by, I loved Phil Collins, A, you know, for that, and B, because I just love his music. And it got to the point where over the summer I was a student coordinator, and I showed the letter to Gabe Anderson to check out, and he thought it was hilarious. And he forwarded it around the office, and kind of the word spread about this. And, you know, people asked Gail Sinclair, like, is this, like, a thing? Like, is this? And, and she actually tried to get him to come. And I had my own little mini Facebook campaign and everything. And I actually got on WPRK and, kind of made my case. And unfortunately, it didn't work out in the end. But we were very, I was hearing things that it was, he had been in contact. You know, they had contacted him, and, you know, there was a chance that it could have happened. So, that for me will always be one of those little memories that just makes me smile, just because I love the Winter Park Institute and I love Phil Collins, and to even have just, like, been like them to have tried was awesome. But, you know, it's cool. It's just, for me, that's always going to be one of my little memories. Once when I graduate Rollins, it's like, did you hear? I almost got Phil Collins to come to my alma mater. So, yeah.
I did have another thing in mind, though.
Oh.
Because there are, like, student events that take place with the different scholars and such. And you've been a part of...
Yeah, you mean, there was... Yes, two of them, actually.
Good.
Now I know what you're talking about. I was thinking... As an honor student, I actually got to be a part of Jane Goodall. So I got to see her ahead of time. She did a mini talk about her life and career, and she talked to us honor students. And then this year, I actually got to sit in with Dr. Azar Nafisi and her talk about, she talked about her book, her new book, which was more biographical, and kind of talked about, you know, Middle Eastern politics and news media, and it was really great. It was very interesting to be able to sit down in a very intimate setting, maybe about 15, 20 people tops, just to have her speak about things that interest her, what she... being so open to answer our questions as students and as members of the community. And I think that's one of the best things I love about the Winter Park Institute, is that they take these scholars who are generally, you know, very out of reach, you know, in a normal setting, and you may never get a chance to very much see. And you not only get to see them and have an amazing opportunity to see them, but there are also many opportunities where, outside of their main talk, they usually have one mini session where the you know, it's a very intimate setting where, you know, a couple students or a couple faculty or even, you know, a small lecture, which is, you know, very intimate in our, you know, our stadiums are very intimate settings, where they can just talk about things that interest them or something that they think is important to talk about and would like to have that message out there. And I think that's the one thing, if there's anything I love about the WPI, is this, is that you really, by the end of any talk, you're like, you just feel like I had a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And that's why I personally highly recommend checking it out, you know, to just because I've had an amazing academic and personal experiences over the years.
Mm-hmm. And as you've heard here first, folks, maybe not here first, but in the interview, you know, some of the names this year are primo.
I mean, Eli Wiesel, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Ken Burns.
I mean, Jackie Robinson's, I think, his daughter.
Yep.
You know, like, these are, you know, primo. So it'll be very interesting. If anything, I would definitely recommend just checking one, you know, because just to have that experience and be able to say that you got to see the grandson of Gandhi, you know, to speak about his father's vision or whatever.
Grandfather.
Thank you. It really is a treat. It's really a treat that you can only get at Rollins.
That's right, and we'll take you into some music and see you on the other side for the second half of the Sanspur Hour.
Root.
I like the way sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown, and I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight with a billion stars all around, 'cause I got a peaceful, easy feeling that I know you want. I'm already standing on the ground, and I found out a long time ago what a woman can do to your soul. All but she can't take you anyway. You don't already know how to go. And I got a peaceful, easy feeling, and I know you won't let me down, 'cause I'm already standing ground. this feeling I may know you as a lover and a friend. But this voice keeps whispering in my other ear, tells me I may never see you again. 'Cause I get a peaceful,
back and with the second half of the Sands Per Hour. Before we get started, Teletraffic is reporting zero delays, but we would remind you, in Seminole County later today, kids will be getting off school for the first day of school, so be careful around school zones in those areas.
What was the song that we just heard, Greg?
Why, it was Eagles with Peaceful Easy Feeling.
Very cool, very cool. I was digging the vibes.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So, Greg, as we kind of mentioned before, there's something going on Facebook related to Rollins. It's been blowing up the interwebs over the last few days.
Is that so?
Yeah, it is so. Two things, actually. But first, we'll talk with the one that came out first, of course. Something called Rollins Confessions.
How does that work?
Have you heard about this?
I've seen people liking things on it.
So if you don't know, Rollins Confessions is based, it works in conjunction with the website College Confessions, and it allows students of the college to post things, anonymously send things to the administrators or the admin of the site, and then they post those things, anonymously on the Facebook page, and they also have a separate page in conjunction with College Confessions. And it's been getting a little bit of controversy, quite a bit of controversy on multiple grounds. I think maybe something that you can touch on definitely for those of us who don't know is that this isn't the first time an anonymous sort of college message board type site has been around at Rollins.
Right. The first of such was Juicy Campus.
Okay.
Which was in 2008, which really swept over the campus. You can post on it, as we were saying, anonymously and say really whatever you like. So people were posting hurtful things about other people and just rumors, unsubstantiated things, and really certainly within the Greek system, and I think within athletics, coaches and others were really urging people not to get on it and be posting these sorts of rumors and other negative things that were really only causing harm to others. And there was even a discussion amongst the newspaper staff whether or not we should be writing about it for the fact of letting other people know about the site. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we did, because posting, well, and printing the articles that we had were really sort of, I guess you could say, therapeutic. You know, it was giving people strategies of how not to take this seriously. Mm-hmm. And, posting, well, and talking about the ridiculousness of it as a concept. And so that was the first time that Rollins was sort of swept in this rumor-laden anonymous message board sort of system. And then after that, I guess it was the next year that College ACB, which was, did that stand for something? Or was it just Anonymous College Board?
Yeah.
Is that, okay. So that was pretty much another iteration of the same thing. Obviously a popular idea, given that gossip is so popular.
Gossip is king.
And so, unfortunately, that also had a run with similar results in that people would be saying negative things about one another. Didn't really amount to anything positive. But now, what is Rollins Confessionals? Here's my idea. It will be less hurtful because it's... because Facebook, you know how we talk about the internet becoming less anonymous?
Mm-hmm.
Facebook helps with that. So that's my assumption. So let me know what's the deal.
Well, the way it works is that it's... because it is on Facebook, the initial posts are anonymous. So they're kind of added in from Rollins Confessional anonymously. But if people who comment on it aren't anonymous, of course, though they're actually just shows their name and whatnot. And I think the admin, I was checking through this ahead of time for research to kind of understand how is this different than other sites. And I think the administrator or administrators, I don't know who specifically is running it, have tried to made an effort to withhold some of the more hurtful comments, probably knowing from past experiences and specific names. I think that they'll mention the first name and the last initial tops. And if it is something that's really hurtful, like, they probably just won't post it at all. So, I mean, that is, you know, interesting. And, you know, it's better. But I think the downsides of something like having a Rollins page, like a Facebook page, is freshmen and first years have much easier access to this information. And actually, already first years have been kind of talking about it and kind of joking about like, oh, I can't. Now I'm nervous about when I get here. But it's also, I mean, it's a thing that, you know, it's, you know, you kind of come to college and you kind of come very doe-eyed, wide-eyed, and very, like, innocent, and, you know, kind of to see all that, especially with many first-years probably not knowing how anonymous College Board type sites work and how a lot of times it's just huff and puff for huff and puff. They'll just kind of look at it, it's like, what did I sign up for? Like, what college am I going to? Which, in reality, if you look at UF or UCF's kind of their versions, it's very much the same, a lot of huff and puff.
And part of what I think would make it maybe not more difficult, but certainly give it a different dynamic, is that we're such a small school, and that even giving the first name and an initial, you're going to know if you know that person. Like, you don't even need to provide any more than that. So what is this counter group?
Yes. Actually, this is very new, and it kind of came in response to Rollins Confessions, is Rollins Compliments, which is an anonymous forum, I'm reading from the description, for spreading your love to anyone in the Rollins community. And pretty much you send in your compliments and as a message, and then they'll post them on the Facebook page. So it's kind of like this kind of opposite, like, counter, like, you know, yeah, you can have your Rollins Confessions, but, you know, this compliments is, you know, it's here to kind of be like, oh, you know, let's add positivity to this campus. Like, not just, like, you know, have, like, the gossip, potential negativeness that comes with that. And obviously, you know, people are going to be more drawn to the gossip because it's always juicy. It's, you know, I found my, even like looking at it for the first time, I found myself just looking through pages and just like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is like, how could you post it? I'm like, oh wait, it's anonymous. But then to later find out about Rollins Compliments, it was very refreshing. It kind of gave me, like, you know, yes, people are going to be crazy and they're going to post their own little whatever. But, you know, it obviously shows that there are also that other side to it. And a part of me wants, I think both of them can coexist. I think, sure, go for it. Allow, you know, if people want to gossip, sure, that's their business. And it's like, and why not? Like, but I think that as long as it doesn't become detrimental, as long as it doesn't turn into something really hurtful, like it has done in the past, then I say, yeah, why not? But there have even been people who have posted on Rollins Confessions and been like, if this turns into another college ACB, I don't know what I'm going to do. Because they remember, especially seniors now who vaguely know about it from their freshman year, are just, you know, they don't want that type of thing to come back.
Right. And let's see. Well, school hasn't even started yet.
That's also something, too. It's like you, and it's like 2 weeks before school starts. I was joking with my friends. It's because I've, like I mentioned last week, I was kind of like getting off Facebook because I was doing LSAT. It's like the 1 week I decide to get off Facebook, this blows up. And I'm just like, you're kidding me, right? So it's like, again, it also doesn't help that, like I mentioned, like the first years, they don't have any impression of the college. They're about to start, and they're like, oh, like, let me learn more about, like, the real Rollins, the real nitty-gritty that they don't tell me on the tour. And unfortunately, like, this isn't the real Rollins. It's an aspect of Rollins, but this isn't the real Rollins either. You know, it's, like, mm-hmm. somewhere in the middle. Like, there is a middle ground. Like, yes, the tours are very squeaky clean. Rollins Confessions is on the other end. It's, like, yes, there may be granules of truth, but it is way blown out of proportion as well. And this is coming from a senior and so a former graduate, like we can assure you. It's you know, it's crazy.
Right. Well, I haven't read much on it, so maybe.
Thanks, Greg. Just throwing me down the river, huh?
No, I'm just being honest. But I have seen when people do tend to like something, and you can see, you know, in your newsfeed, what post did this person like?
Mm-hmm.
So the things that I've seen on there have been almost before compliments started, people were like subversively putting compliments into the confessional one. And so there were ones that were like, you know, honestly, I don't know where I would be without this school, you know, and professors that I've met and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So people, I haven't seen people attach their names by liking the negative things. And that's really the only way that I've seen posts so far.
As somebody who's read through most of the pages, some I agree. Some of them, especially before compliments, were like very nice, and some of them were really sweet. And other ones where I'm reading it, I'm like, I'm not going into the pillar room ever again. I'm not going into the pool ever again. Like, you're reading these comments, I'm like, so I guess nothing's clean on this campus anymore. So it's, you know, again, it's college, and people are going to, like, write about their conquests, especially if they can do so anonymously. But I guess my personal opinion is I think, you know, both can coexist, but definitely you have to – you can't let it be the Wild West. Like, definitely I hope the admins or admin, whoever, you know, mm-hmm. so far has – kept the peace for the most part, and hopefully it lasts if this is going to be a continued thing. And did the administration have something to do with getting ACB or Juicy Campus kind of, I don't know if there ever was something involved with that, with them trying to kind of quell that or trying to squash that?
I think that a lot of the sort of overt motions were even put in by students. I think student government had mm-hmm. issued some kind of motion that went out about urging people not to use it. And then, like I had said, different fraternities and sororities were agreeing to, you know, not go on there. And so I think a lot of it came from the students who were seeing how it was hurting either themselves or their friends, and rising up to try to urge people not to engage in that sort of discourse.
And I think that adds to the other side of being a small campus, is that yes, it, you know, it does have its negatives, but also if enough of the student body are against it, things like this will fade quickly. And that's kind of what happened. And, you know, and of course, you know, as older classes graduate and younger classes who don't know kind of come up, you know,
history
things seven cycles
itself.
So yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But definitely that's something that had been raging on, and you can check out both those pages on, they're both on Facebook if you are curious to see what's going on. What's going on the interwebs.
Yep. What's supposedly going on at Rollins.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
All right, let's get you to another musicale break. What do we got over here?
I mean, I think to kind of, you know, we mentioned some of this negativity. I think now we should add a little bit of love. Some Super Duper Love by Joss Stone.
Okay, let's hear it. Joss Stone.
Yes, I miss Joss Stone.
Where's she at?
I don't know where she's at. She's probably back in England, but she, not only just an amazing songstress, but cute as all hell. I love the British women,
songstrater.
She is a just songwriter, singer, and all around just adorable. So, yes. So, Greg, you have something to talk about that is quite interesting, and it brings up a lot of questions.
Yeah. You hear about this Google co-creator, founder, who is supporting fake meat?
A little bit, vaguely. Tell me a little bit more about it.
Well, which one of the... Sergey Brin. You'll remember him from co-founding Google. He's been putting money into fake meat production. So what this is supposed to mean is, you know, like solving world hunger through fake meat. Not real.
Synthetic meat.
Synthetic, yes. Sort of cultivating animal tissue in a lab and eating it.
Yeah, isn't it... Didn't they mention it, not to freak people out, but they get cow stem cells and, like, combine them all together to make, like, a faux meat patty?
Yeah, it creates a patty form, you know, maybe if you had a different sized petri dish, you could make, like, a dinosaur shape or something, like a cookie cutter.
Like a star shape or, like, a sun shape. Sun shapes or circles, I'm sorry.
I was going to say smiley face, but that's a circle, too.
Yeah, that works. That works. You could have little, like, spaces in the petri dish to... I'm guessing, so they had their first tests, and how was it? I think that's the biggest question. How does it taste? Is it any good?
Not great yet. Yet.
Yet.
Hey, maybe... They just need some herbs and spices.
A little bit of that emerald seasoning, you know?
Yeah, some sea salt.
Some pepper, a little bit of paprika maybe. Some cayenne.
Yeah, I'm a cumin guy myself.
I enjoy cumin. Cumin's good.
So, it didn't pass the smell test, I guess you could say. Oof. No, it probably smelled right. I meant that in a metaphorical way.
Oh, okay. It's just like, it doesn't taste good and it smells rancid. This is going to be a wondrous product.
But no, this brings up a lot of questions on whether this could be a viable solution for solving hunger. I think broadening the question from whether it can replace meat is more appropriate, given that increasing meat production probably would not solve world hunger.
Interesting. Why?
Because it takes up a lot of resources to cultivate meat.
That is true. Grass, farming, grazing.
Yes. So I have one statistic which states that for every pound of beef produced that you'll see on a store shelves, Guess how many gallons of water that took in production?
I'm going to guess... 50.
5,000.
That's not close to 50. Wow. 5,000 pounds of water?
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's... So I guess the cow drinks 5,000 pounds of water, yeah, in a lifetime.
I think that statistic relates to just all that's attributed to that animal in production. So let's say there's 50 animals on a farm. We're just talking variables here.
Okay.
And... So that one animal takes up, that fraction of all of the farm's resources. So you could talk about, they use sprinklers on the
grass,
and they, of course, give them water. They're washing the animals. They're washing their cages, things like that. Right. I think that's how you come up with that number.
But still, I mean, that's huge. Like even.
Not to.
No, I agree. But I would never imagine like even that process to be so much, and especially with water. You know, not only water, but like we mentioned, you know, grazing pasture. There's only so much land that usable, viable land that cows can eat from that, you know, could be used for other resources, quite frankly.
And even in the Amazon, there's a lot of deforestation done to produce this sort of land suitable for livestock production. And another question that's interesting is, does this solve sort of ethical concerns over animal issues?
I was going to ask that. How does that, like, what would PETA think about this or other organizations?
What would PETA think? I would think that given if this synthetic meat is being derived from animal sources, I would say that, you know, they would be arguing, well, now there's animals in the labs and you're taking their stem cells and all that. So that's probably not solving that. And I don't think you'll see a vegetarian eating synthetic meat either. And going back to that question, can it better feed the world? I think that this is still better conceptualized when you think about if meat could better feed the world in general. And another statistic along the lines of what we talked about with the cost of production is that if all of the land given to livestock and its production were used for farming and plants, the world would be better fed and global hunger problems would be solved. And while the Google, or at least one of its co-founders, is personally supporting this, backing plant-based animal product replacements is Bill Gates.
Wow.
Yeah.
All the billionaires are just jumping into the mix.
Mm-hmm. So he has invested in Hampton Creek, which is creating plant protein-based substitutes for eggs, and has praised meat substitute creator Beyond Meat. And so what Gates says is raising meat takes a great deal of land and water and has a substantial environmental impact. Put simply, there's no way to produce enough meat for 9 billion people. Yet we can't ask everyone to become vegetarians. We need more options for producing meat without depleting our resources. So that was sort of not the extreme solution of perhaps forcing vegetarianism on everyone, which isn't realistic. You don't want to force people to do that. But it is good to realize, as he has, that going to plant-based options for food sourcing is more realistic in solving some of these hunger issues in the world.
For sure, for sure. I think the really interesting thing that this brings up is whenever I hear this, I always think of GMOs and genetically modified organisms and especially, you know, vegetables and fruits that have been seen as unhealthy, and many European countries have banned GMOs.
That's right.
And is, I guess, what kind of this comes out of it is the concept of natural. I think that that's a big concern to people, even non-vegetarians, just people. They're kind of very weirded out by the concept of my carrots are being made from a petri dish. You know, it's like it's not something because our mindset has always been seed goes into ground, water grows.
Yeah.
So I think that's also another boundary that has to be kind of gone up and passed, because, you know, people just mentally are like, that doesn't sound natural to me. Why would I eat this?
Sure. The whole organic game isn't just the fare of the vegan or the vegetarian these days, now that meat eaters are looking for, you know, grass-fed beef, free-range chickens, and looking for that organic label on these sorts of animal products and fish and all that. So certainly that sort of call is being felt around the food world, if you will.
And I think also it's becoming more of a viable option because people are willing to pay for it. Where in the past it might not have necessarily been profitable, people are going to places like Whole Foods and looking for, like, I'm willing to pay the extra $2-3 for something that I know is going to be healthier or at least more natural.
Right. So definitely with more sort of organic or Whole Foods based grocery chains coming up, like there's a Trader Joe's on the way in the Orlando, and then a Fresh Market is another one. And so certainly, and those stores even have meat and dairy and all that. So certainly the health craze of today isn't as much of a fad as perhaps maybe, what's a past one? Low carbs. That's still sort of in vogue.
Okay, well, Atkins.
There we go. There's a crazy one.
Or the South Beach diet. Those 10 diets.
Uh-huh.
I definitely think people are starting to look more at, like, I don't want... They're shirking away from more the kitschy diets or the cleanses, and they're just like, you know, if I can just eat healthier,
mm-hmm.
just generally, like, if I can just start eating better...
Yes. That's what I believe, that diets do not make you healthier because you need to make sustainable choices.
I think the
sustainable
big,
changes.
Exactly.
Well.
I mean, for me, in the past, I've always had difficulty with diets. I can never really keep a diet because I'm okay. Like, I'll eat healthy for a month. But then mm-hmm. after a while, I'm like, I get sick of it. I get bored of it. I get cranky. I'm like, I want to eat real food again. I go back, and any and all weight that I may have lost comes back immediately. And it really wasn't until this summer where I have been trying to eat healthier, just generally, just trying to change my outlook and realizing, well, I mean, I can still kind of pig out from time to time, and I can, you know, have that extra slice of pizza, sure. But as long as I kind of counterbalance that with trying to eat more fruits and vegetables or eat more, you know, healthier grain products, and going out to the gym more often, you know, little things like that, and changing the way that I live my life. And I think that's the key to sustained growth. People like me, I don't want to have to, you know, at first you don't want to have to change your life. Like, you want to be able to, like, do this little thing for about 2 weeks or 3 weeks tops and then be set. And that's just not how it works.
Yeah. And so, maybe instead of just giving up that thing that you keep craving and then just being so focused on getting that again after the diet, it's coming up with something else you really like. Like, you know, hey, celery and peanut butter is real good.
Delicious.
So how about that's my new jam?
Exactly.
You know?
It's actually funny you mention that, because as I've, you know, now I'm trying to try different vegetables, different fruits, different combinations of things, and celery and peanut butter is my jam. If I'm craving peanut butter, you know, you don't want to go all out and get crazy with it, but
fried bananas. Elvis over here.
I don't want to, you know, die on the toilet anytime soon, but getting, you know, three or four stalks of celery, you know, cutting them up, you know, those really long stalks, and you can have snacks for, you know, next 2-4 days and just have a little bit of peanut butter and things like that. You can still have those sweets and a little bit of oil that you want, but you're now adding vegetables into your diet and things that will really build up your nutrition. And I'm definitely all for it. Synthetic meat, a little bit interesting to see, but I don't know. With technology comes fear. So we'll see. We'll see.
And we will see you next week on the Sanspare Hour.
My name is Amir Sadeh.
And I'm Greg Golden.
Have a wonderful week, folks.
See ya.